Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, two more preseason games down, two more to go. Not a ton going on, but we are going to turn our attention to the goalies today because there seems to be a little bit of intrigue heading into who's actually going to be in the crease when the season actually starts a week from today. Barry Trotz isn't sweating it, so I'm not sweating it, but I feel like we should talk about it.
Yeah, he's not sweating it. I'm starting to sweat it a little bit. The one thing I am happy about is that it didn't happen like it was something known coming in with Varlamov. So it was like they obviously have had a plan in place, and he's probably got a target date that they're obviously never going to tell us. I mean, you can have Lou held hostage in a basement and he wouldn't tell you. He'd go to his grave without telling you what Semyon Varlamov might come back, as fickle as that sounds. But it is a little worrying. But with two games left in the preseason, my main concern now is just we got to get Ilya Sorokin just through these next two games scotch-free and hope that, you know, I mean, I've got every confidence in the world that he's going to be a really good goaltender for the Islanders for a long time. So he definitely, if of course Schneider was the only other goalie in town, it would be a little scary, but yeah, it's like, it's a threat level, what, orange or whatever right now. It's not too bad. And we'll see, but yeah, it would have been too good to be true to get through the preseason or even to get to this point of the preseason without anybody outside of Matt Martin banged up right now.
Yeah, it is weird that they have kind of gone this way. And obviously we're talking about Semyon Varlamov here. He hasn't played at all in the preseason. And what Barry Trotz has kept preaching this entire time, pregame, postgame, practice days, doesn't matter. Somebody asked him about Varlamov, and his answer has always been, it's a nagging thing, like you said, it kind of goes back to a while, and they want to make sure that he gets all the treatment and all the medical attention right now before we start the season, and that kind of time goes away, again, with particular notice that the Islanders have that 13-game road trip coming up to start the season. So, like, God forbid somebody gets hurt, you know, that's going to be compacted even more when you're in Nashville or Florida or whatever. And so, you know, what he's saying makes a lot of sense. And, you know, at the same time, you know, Varlamov has been in the league now for like 10 or 12 years. I don't know how many, you know, I'm not a goalie. I don't know like what purpose preseason games really hold. You know, I'm assuming you want to get into some game action. We're going to talk about Corey Schneider in a minute, who's looked pretty good in game action, I think, so far. And so, you know, on one hand, you're kind of like, I don't know, what is this guy going to, you know, what's the preseason game going to really do for this guy? But at the same time, as Barry said today, and this is kind of where the threat level comes in, he was like, you know, we're running out of time here with Varley to get him in, which basically means like you're not going to see him tomorrow night or Thursday night versus the Devils, and you're most likely not going to see him on Saturday against the Rangers either. He said that we're looking at Carolina next Thursday to start. And they do have Ilya Sorokin, who has looked very good, you know, again in this preseason. But, you know, like you said, the fear with any preseason anything is injuries. They had a big brawl in the Panthers Lightning game the other day, and Bill Guerin was on with Jeff Merrick today on the radio, and Merrick asked him, and Guerin was like, well, it means that, you know, guys are keyed up for the game. That's good. They got a lot of energy. And I felt like saying, if I was a general manager, my first thought when I saw teams duke it out like that in the preseason was to be like, nobody friggin' get hurt. Please. I swear to God, if you get hurt, I'm going to come down there and hurt you some more. So hopefully that kind of thing doesn't happen to the Islanders, but they do have two more games, and looks like it's going to be Ilya Sorokin and Corey Schneider playing in them. And, you know, we don't know what the split will be. Schneider played all the last night's game against the Flyers, that we'll talk about in a second. But it is a little weird that, you know, this guy who's effectively going to be the number one goalie is not going to get a ton of reps here in the preseason to just, you know, get things going. He's obviously going to be in practice once he's healthy enough, but I don't know if that's going to be the same. So we're going to have to just hold our breath and hope that it is.
Yeah. And I think that the Schneider game, was that yesterday? Against the Flyers. I would say that each preseason presents like two, maybe three important moments. And yesterday was one for Schneider. And I think that Anders Lee playing is another. And then I think the third important moment will be the last game with probably Sorokin just playing a full game, and what I'm assuming will be the you know, final kick at the can for players on the fringe. So like those are the three things that like have piqued my interest in part of the calendar that is really hard for to pique my interest in. And the one thing I would say, I was on a podcast this morning with guys from NHL.com, and we were talking about just different bets for awards, and there's no sports book really. There's one, FanDuel, I think, is the only one that has Ilya Sorokin listed for Vezina Trophy odds, and he's like 25-1, which is, you know, it's not. He's probably should be like 50-1, considering he's not the number one goalie at least, and 50-1. But like if someone else posts him at a big number, I think he's actually worth thinking about, because if he's got the potential to kind of just this could be the moment where he wrestles the crease from Varlamov, and there's a little bit of a changing of the guard moment, because you know, we've seen him in different spurts through his career where he just looked dominant, but the thing is Trotz is always so by the book, I guess, or by his own plans with handing out goaltending starts. Remember, even with Greiss and Leonard, they went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth
for 50 games, right?
Yeah, it was incredible to watch. Yeah, you know, Thomas Greiss could pitch a 53 save shutout against the Hurricanes, and two nights later, Robin Leonard's back in the net. he does have this plan, and he likes to stick to it, but this forces his hand a little bit where, you know, Sorokin plays real well in the first few games. It could be, we all assumed, I think the split would probably be like, you know, 48 games for Varlamov, 34, I think would be the correct math there for Sorokin. But I think if Sorokin plays real well and to start the season, he could flip it because he could be the better goalie. And he's obviously in his prime now. And as good as Varlamov has been for us, and he's been spectacular and is starting to get some credit for that, by the way. And also another thing worth mentioning is that doesn't get brought up enough is that deal at the time was derided by many, probably us too, the Varlamov signing. Yeah. I think we both were probably, first of all, it was tough to see Leonard go after that season. And secondly, you know, what did we know about Semyon Varlamov, really? Like, not much.
Yeah.
He's been so solid and reliable in the goal. And, but this could be a little bit of a chance for Sorokin to establish himself as the number one guy, for not just for now, but for the future. And, you know, I don't particularly have any qualms with that happening, because if it does happen, it means that Sorokin is playing at a really, really high level.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to happen. We all assume it'll happen at some point. And yeah, that's true. Maybe this is that time. You know, it's funny. Like, I just kind of assumed that, again, with this 13-game road trip coming up, that even if Varlamov was healthy, I was kind of under the impression that Schneider might get in a couple of games anyway. You know, like, even if he's just dressed as a backup to give the other guy a break, I just kind of thought that was going to happen anyway. And now, you know, if Varlamov doesn't start the season, you're kind of looking at the possibility of Corey Schneider starting a game for the Islanders. They do have a couple of back-to-backs in that 13-game road trip. And, you know, again, I wouldn't be surprised to see him start there, provided Varlamov hasn't already come back, which is possible, because I don't think those back-to-backs happen too early. But let's talk about Corey Schneider real quick. So he's played in the last two games for the Islanders. One was an overtime loss to the Devils, and then one was a shutout win over the Flyers last night. Again, these are preseason games, so please, you know, take whatever required grains of salt that you need. But, you know, I thought he looked pretty good. The game against the Devils, the Islanders came out and absolutely dominated the first period. Kiefer Bellows scored on a nice give and go with Barzal like a minute and a half in, and it looked like it was going to be a very, very long day for the very, very undermanned Devils. And boy, they just didn't want to go away. And they end up scoring late in third and scoring the overtime winner. I believe Igor Sharangovich, who has made a habit of scoring in overtime in his young career, scored the game winner in overtime. And, like, you know, I mean, it's a preseason game, so, like, kind of who cares? But at the same time, as Andrew Gross put it right afterwards, like, if this was a regular season game, this would have been a pretty bad loss. And I don't, you know, nobody seemed to be overly concerned about it. You know, the Islanders lineup was kind of a hodgepodge again. You had Kiefer Bellows on a line with Barzal. Like, it wasn't exactly, you know, game time lineup or anything like that, but it does kind of, like, you know, it was an afternoon game on a Saturday, and it was like, man, I blocked off my afternoon for this, really. And so it was a little bit disappointing, but, what are you going to do? And again, the Devils, you know, they're a team that you need to keep an eye on, because, you know, they've added some pieces this year. I don't know if they're a playoff team necessarily in this division, but they're not a patsy either. They're not going to roll over. They got some guys that, you know, have some pride and they want to play and win. And they didn't give up in that game, even though the Islanders made it very clear in the opening few minutes that they, you know, just wanted to get the thing over with. And then came last night's game against the Flyers, also in Bridgeport. It was the total opposite. The Islanders, I thought, played a little bit sloppy. Again, they started out pretty good, but started getting a little bit sloppy, and it was kind of up to Schneider to make some saves. And I mean, the Flyers did not send their A team. Let's be honest about that. But, you know, a save is a save, and it was pretty busy. I believe he made, like, I don't know, 26 saves or something like that, 24 saves. And he, you know, he put in a good night, and he looked pretty good. You know, again, from that AHL camera, which is like, you know, watching something on a PlayStation 1, you know, from 1998. So it was hardly the HD experience that we're used to. But I thought he looked pretty good. They ended up winning 3-0. They scored two goals in the first period. And like you said before, the other big story besides Schneider was Anders Lee is back on the ice. He scored one of the most Anders Lee goals you could possibly ever see. Zdeno Chara also suited up for the Islanders in that game for the first time since 2001. Played with Noah Dobson. Looked pretty good at some times. Other times got a little bit caught in their own zone. And then Josh Bailey scored on the power play with about a minute to go to make it 3-0. So, you know, it was a bit of a mixed bag. Even Chara said, you know, could have been better. It was a decent game. I would agree with that. But I thought that the signs for Lee and Schneider in particular were pretty encouraging, all things considered. And considering their importance going forward in about a week, you know?
Yeah. And I think one other thing I would note is that the power play has, I guess, seemed to be doing pretty well with Erik Gustafsson.
Yes, and very busy whatever it was Tuesday night. Very busy.
And I've been saying this to people that like it's really starting to dawn on me like how this team has been constructed, because we know how it's constructed at the top and we know, but the stuff kind of like below the fourth line, below the third pairing, and in between, like almost like the quadruple A-ers, like what Lou and Trotz's strategy is, and it seems to really be showing now, because for the first time the team has had like the cap flexibility to have some organizational depth, and they definitely have enough pieces to have, like, I think Trotz was the one who said like they can roll six NHL lines at this right now with this roster, and depending on how, you know, quote unquote, many players sneak through waivers, which we talked about last time. this is a deeper team than people realize, because the Islanders are known to be very well balanced lines 1 through 4, pairings 1 through 3, and in the goal. But it's really like lines 1 through 6, and then having Erik Gustafsson, Thomas Hickey, Sebastian Aho, Robin Salo, and Samuel Bolduc as your 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th defenseman is pretty damn impressive. And what I've realized is that Lou and Barry are so honed in on roles, and we know this, but like they brought Erik Gustafsson in for one reason, because heck, this power play could go to shit, which is saying something, because it's been pedestrian forever. But without Nick Leddy, like what if Noah Dobson can't handle it? What if having Ryan Pulock man the second unit with whoever isn't going to work? And if it needs a shot in the arm, you have a guy like Erik Gustafsson in town to do that, and you just got to be able to manage his flaws defensively. And I think that's the thinking here, is that these guys are particular, like they're brought in for such particular reasons. You know, even someone like Ross Johnston, why they've kept him around is like, hey, he's good at this role, which is filling in for maybe Matt Martin or Cal Clutterbuck. And same with, I think we're going to start seeing that with Richard Panik and stuff. And it's really quite interesting, because it's something that you wouldn't pay attention to if you weren't us or the people listening to this podcast, people who love the Islanders and live and die with them and are thinking about them all the time. But I think a lot of people are almost underrating just how deep this team is. But even though they're all saying this is a really deep, balanced group, they might still be overlooking just how long this list of good, like capable players are.
Yeah. They're missing the actual depth by looking at the sort of shallow depth. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's a point. And we talked about that last week, like signing guys like Chara, like Zach Parise, like it creates depth, and all of a sudden you're pushing guys that would maybe have been in the lineup anyway down a peg, and they've got to kind of work their way back up. And yeah, Gustafsson still's on a PTO. You brought up cuts before. So the Islanders waived about a dozen guys today, that are most of whom are going to end up in Bridgeport. I don't think any of them are in any danger of being claimed on waivers. Guys like Cole Bardreau, who played last night, you know, is doing his thing. Otto Koivula, who's going to go back there. And, these are the guys who are going to make up your sort of core Bridgeport group. Gustafsson is still here on a PTO, on a tryout. Hasn't quite been signed yet. Trotz seems to like him. I mean, he played a ton last night. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him sign. I don't know how much money they have under the cap to sign him. But, you know, at some point before the first game next week, they are going to put Johnny Boychuk on LTIR. So they're going to get his cap hit, you know, kind of space above the top of the cap. Robin Salo is still here. I don't believe he was waived today. But Trotz has raved about him too, and said he's looked really good too. And then Sebastian Aho too. I don't think he was waived either. So I think they're all still here. And, you know, there's only so much room on D, especially when you bring in Zdeno Chara. So I don't know what's interesting. I mean, I think if they use Gustafsson like a power play specialist, it might work. Like, I mean, again, he looked pretty good last night, but, you know, you can see where, like, maybe the defensive liabilities that have kind of dogged him for a while could be a problem. But, you know, this is Barry Trotz we're talking about here. Like, he's not going to put somebody in a position where he's not going to succeed. Like, that's what Trotz is all about. Like you said, he's all about roles. We want you to do your job, do it well, and we all win.
It gives them the chance to maybe roll, you know, with 11 forwards and 7 defensemen too at times, which is, you know, could just give people a different look here and there. I know John Cooper loves doing that. Trotz, I think he's done that a couple of times in his tenure here. But so, yeah, it's a, I think the one waiver guy that I am interested in is Otto Koivula, because here's a guy who has had some hype. And when I say some hype, I mean that was a couple of years ago when we were just begging for anybody, really. And it looked like he looked pretty promising, though. He did, as a potential like third or fourth line center. And he has kind of flown under the radar since then in terms of both like actual results and hype. And so I do wonder if he goes, because because of what I said, like somebody buying a flyer on him as a one time, you're well talked about fourth line center prospect. I mean, you know, and of course, if the Leafs do it, it'll be a huge deal about how, you know, what Kyle Dubas saw in Otto Koivula that made him snatch him on waivers and provide the fourth line center we've been dreaming of forever, like that kind of article from The Athletic or something.
How the Leafs fixed Otto Koivula.
And then when he gets waived and sent to the Marlies, it'll be Otto Koivula is a perfect fit for the Marlies, yes. like I was saying. And it's just, but he's the only one I think that was any interest to me, and I think to other teams, because I mean, we make fun of it on Hockey Twitter last week about, oh, you can't, how can you let this guy slip through? Like, I think like a team like Arizona or Buffalo could probably use someone with his upside down the middle, because they don't have anything in center. So, but he's the only one, like I would say.
Yeah. So I pulled up the thing here from Renaud Lavoie, who, if you don't follow him on Twitter, you should, if only so he can shout the waiver guys at you. They changed the waiver time to 2 o'clock in the afternoons now. I don't know if I like that. I like the noon waiver sort of town crier, like, hear you. These are the guys who are on waivers.
It's also got to be annoying for the players, because, I mean, we'll talk about all or nothing in the second half of the show, because I have a review for you. But there's a scene with the Jimmy Vesey waiver, and he asked Kyle Dubas if he has to come to practice in the morning. He's like, yeah, you'll come to practice, and they have till noon to pick you up, and I'll let you know. So it's like, you're going to make these guys sweat it till 2 p.m. Yeah. Now? I mean, come on.
I'm sure he really paid attention in that practice, you know, wondering if he's going to have a job come to noon. But yeah, it's sort of a barbaric way to do things, but, you know, that comes with the territory. But yeah, so Dmytro Timoshev, Otto Koivula, Austin Zarnik, Cole Bardreau, and Andy Andreoff, Parker Wotherspoon, Mitch Van de Sample, Paul Ledoux, Grant Hutton all waived today. Yeah, of those guys, you know, Koivula is probably the only guy, maybe Andreoff, because he's the kind of guy who bounces around a little bit. But I mean, the reason Lou waited this long was so that he could sneak these guys through without them being claimed, because it's not just the Islanders who are waiving these guys. It's every other team in the league waiving anywhere between, you know, 2 and 10 other guys. So hopefully they could all sneak through. But, you know, most of these guys weren't going to, you know, obviously break camp with the Islanders. Ledoux, you know, also got a big shot here in preseason. But, you know, I guess he was signed to a 2-way contract anyway, so he'll go back to the AHL. But, you know, any of these guys they've already played now, so they could come up and play for the Islanders in case somebody gets hurt. You know, one of these days, I don't know, do a deep dive on Mitch Van de Sample, because like he was drafted like 100 years ago. I mean, that was like the Dal Col, you know, Hosang draft. And it's like, wow, that guy's been here a long time. What's the deal with this guy? You know,
yeah, he had like almost like a Bodie Wild situation, right? Where he like got hurt early in one camp, like, which was supposed to be his like big chance. And then I think he got hurt for a whole year or something. But yeah, he's kind of just always been around. Him and I feel like Parker Wotherspoon has been around for just as long too.
When you said a Bodie Wild situation, I was like, wait, they exiled him to Europe in the Phantom Zone because you want to get vaccinated? But not that kind of Bodie Wild situation. Yes, you're right. He was injured by something. But it's just interesting.
Bodie Wild situation 1.0.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So we'll have to look into that. But anyway, I forget how we got on the subject. But anyway, as far as the goalies go, I thought Schneider looked pretty good. He certainly seemed pretty happy to be there. You know, this is the first time in a long time he's gotten to play a full game. And he said after the game, like, they told him you're going to get first two periods. But when he went into the second intermission, they were like, all right, you got the third. And he's like, okay. And he went out and he did a great job. He looked really, really good. He moved well. You know, he was tracking the puck really well. Yeah, there were some weird shots there. The Flyers did crash the net a little bit, as they are wont to do. But, you know, this is speaking of injuries. I mean, this guy's he's come back from a long, long, long list of injuries. He's well over 30 years old. You know, he's looking clearly to hopefully, you know, be part of a team that goes on a long run with some guys that he knows from his time with the Devils. So it's hard not to root for Corey Schneider. I think it's going to be good. You know, seeing him play too many games for the Islanders, I think, would be a bad sign. I wouldn't be surprised, again, if Varlamov is injured to start the season, if he gets a couple of games started, especially the back-to-backs. I think the Islanders could do worse. I think he would probably be okay. You know, famous last words and all that, but I think he'll be all right. And it was good to see him out there playing pretty well. And, you know, I think going into this preseason, nobody would have thought that we would have paid that much attention to Corey Schneider playing in a preseason game, but now we kind of have to, because we're a week out from the start of the season and the Islanders starting goaltender hasn't played yet. So now all of a sudden Corey Schneider, you're on deck, basically, is what the only thing you can really say.
Yeah. It's you said it, like, you know what time of the season it is if we're talking about Corey Schneider for 6 minutes in 2021, and he's playing for the New York Islanders of all teams. But I think you know, I like to make fun of some Leafs people. I mean, I like to make fun of a lot of Leafs people, but for in this particular instance, they made a huge deal about Aaron Dell last season.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when they signed him as a number three goalie, and, it was just so funny, because Dell, all of a sudden, when Kyle Dubas signed Aaron Dell, it was another stroke of genius. This is an incredible third goalie. Somehow, you know, Dubas was the only general manager who realized that in a season with the taxi squad and a shortened season, and we might need three goalies. So smart of him, where everybody else was also doing the same thing. But 2 weeks later, Dell is waived, goes to New Jersey. Nobody has a peep to say. And today he was actually waived by the Sabres and usurped by Dustin Tokarski, of all people. not some up and coming hotshot goaltender, but it's going to be Craig Anderson and Dustin Tokarski. Once again, nobody ever said, hey, maybe we kind of overreacted to Aaron Dell signing as the Leafs' third goalie, but that's okay. But I think when it comes to third goalie, and I'm not saying it's a huge deal for teams to have a good number three, but you know, I don't know who every team's third goalie is at the moment. I do know who the Leafs' third goalie is, of course, is Michael Hutchinson, and I know the Sabres now have Aaron Dell as their number three. I think the Rangers have Keith Kincaid still around. I think I would take Corey Schneider over most of these people, which is going back to the point that I was, you know, talking about before, which is, I think Corey Schneider is maybe the kind of perfect candidate for this kind of situation, because he is past his prime. He's definitely not a 40-game NHL goalie anymore, but he's a good guy, looks like, to have in the organization, and seems like everybody likes him. And he's the type of guy that understands that when he goes to Bridgeport, he is going to be the even the backup there, like the guy who's helping whoever, you know, Jacob Skarik, whoever the young goalie is playing for the Sound Tigers, or excuse me, sorry, Lou, the Bridgeport Islanders. yes. You know, he gets the role, and he'll probably embrace it better than most other people. And I also don't think that anybody will pick him up on waivers ever if he's shuttled back and forth a little bit too. So maybe he'll even pull a Jason Spezza and come out and say, I'm not going to play. If I get sent down, I'm not playing for, if anyone picks me up, I'll retire rather than play for anyone else but Lou, like Spezza did with the Leafs last year. But yeah, I think he's just like, it's just a decent fit for Corey Schneider. And that's fine. I mean, he's the number three goalie. We could talk about him for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, we didn't even bring up the fact that the Islanders didn't trade for him at the draft that year, that they traded need a rider for Clutterbuck. It's a whole thing. It goes, this yeah. relationship goes back many, many years. We don't need to get into that. But it is important to note when you mentioned the Jason Spezza comparison that only feel good stories can happen to the Leafs. No other teams can have feel good stories. Nobody else. You're not allowed to feel good for a veteran on another team that's, you know, trying to go out on top. That only works for the Leafs. You know, Jason Spezza gets the parades. Everybody else is like, why would they sign that guy? So that's how that works.
Joe Thornton's in Florida, and I didn't see the Thornton parade. So,
he doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, he's gone. He's gone now. RIP Joe Thornton. Anyway, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff, including some secret intel from Lou Lamoriello. I don't know. We'll see. And also, Mike will tell us what he thought of All or Nothing, the Leafs show on Amazon, and announcement of a special episode that we're going to come at you with this weekend. All right. So give us a minute and then come back. Thanks.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Our favorite sponsor is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can find t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. The season is starting, so if you want cool hockey gear before the season starts, VintageIceHockey.com is the place to go. They also have our Al Arbor t-shirts. And our portion of the sales go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. I've been saying this same thing for like years now. You'd think I'd know what it's all about. You could also use the code LIGHTHOUSE15 to save 15%. So VintageIceHockey.com. Go there today. Kevin is constantly adding new cool stuff. And you gotta go to this site because it's just great. So last week we talked about UBS Arena. And how, you know, we were wondering how they were going to finish this thing by November 20th, because there was an awful lot going on. There's still an awful lot going on there. I saw some glass going up along the boards. The suites are getting done. There's lights happening there, which I guess carpeting has gone into those suites. And actually, just now, while we were on, the Twitter account for UBS Arena tweeted some looks at their concourse and the all-important men's room. So you can take a look at what the men's room is going to look like. It's very wide. It's very nice. It's a very big gulf between the urinals on one wall and the sinks on the other. Very excited to use the urinals at UBS Arena. I did think it was funny that, like, after we talked about it, obviously, look, we're joking. I mean, obviously, you know, we expect them to be finished with it. We're not engineers. We have no idea what we're talking about. But I'm just, you know, kind of sitting home watching this video. The next day, there was like a tour and like a press thing and Tim Leiwicki doing kind of stuff. I'm sure it was scheduled beforehand. It's just a coincidence. But I did think it was kind of funny that they went into this whole thing just as we were like, how are they going to finish this thing? So
Scott Malkin was there, right? I think.
What's that?
Right, was Scott Malkin there for the first time in like 6 years that he popped his head up publicly?
Oh, yeah. He was, yeah. And it was written up by Sean Shapiro, who was the Stars writer at The Athletic. Now he's more sort of national NHL media guy. And he wrote a whole thing about it too. And I mean, it wasn't anything anybody didn't already know, but about how it's, you know, going to be, the airflow is going to be, you know, it's just kind of this, because it's being built during the time of COVID, the airflow and the you know, ventilation and stuff is going to be top notch because they want to make sure that everybody is safe. And there's all kinds of little bells and whistles and stuff that they're going to have. And, you know, it was that kind of stuff, but I do think it was funny that it came a day after, like, we're sitting here going like, I hope they finish this thing. But yeah. And then there was another sort of, I guess, what was it, like a season ticket holder event or something like that that you had heard about? Or
it was a like a partner summit. So people who I guess are advertising or are financially who are selling stuff at the building, what I'm assuming is what the criteria was. Yeah. But yeah, and we had a listener, David Skernick, reach out from that his brand, the Pinot Project from Skernick Wines, will be there, and he passed along some notes, some espionage stuff, because they kicked the media out. They're just so Lou, and some of the things that are pretty funny. He talked about how Lou basically had a huge part in basically every part of building this arena, including making the locker room an oval shape. He didn't want any corners in a locker room. I don't know why, but yeah, that he noted that Lou says he considers himself like a conductor of an orchestra where the players are playing and the coaches, and then he's got his back to the media and to the fans, which I think is both a hilarious visual to think about. You know, it's Lou on whatever they like, the soapbox that they stand on, and then you got a Sorokin playing stand up bass, I would assume, and actually maybe he'd probably be like a violinist, and then just everybody shouting at Lou trying to get answers and him just ignoring it. But I just think it is funny, because it's just the more and more evidence you get on Lou, it's just the more and more. First of all, everyone who I've ever talked to who's dealt with him has nothing, and we talked about this last week with Hosang, like everybody says, just speaks the world of him, which I never understood as an outsider. Like, I didn't think that was the case when he was with the Devils and I guess with the Leafs. I always thought he was kind of he didn't have the reputation of being like a player's coach or player's manager. It seemed like everyone, he just like had frosty relationships with everyone, but I guess I couldn't have been more wrong. I've had conversations just through work with a bunch of people at different teams or companies that are related to hockey, and everybody just loves him. They just love him. Like, as long as you kind of give him the respect that he will give back to you, he's great. So, and I understand how frustrating it could be to, if your job is covering the Islanders, for us as fans too, not knowing a lot of stuff, like we still don't know how much money Zach Parise and Zdeno Chara signed for, and the Elliot Friedman 32 Thoughts today had a great line where another executive said that Lou has his own central registry. Three Islander thoughts. Still nothing on Chara or Parise signing, by the way, from him or Jim Merrick, but did. Russ Johnston getting into 32 thoughts was definitely a long shot, and he was.
Those three thoughts in today's 32 thoughts represent probably about 60% of the Islanders' thoughts we'll see from Elliot all year long. So I would think probably the next Islanders' thought will probably come around sometime around March.
When Russ Johnston's claimed on waivers at some point.
Well, around the deadline, it'd be like, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Islanders are sneaking around. Like, that's what it would be, you know.
But I just can't believe Ross Johnston. But I mean, also, like, we talked about the Varlamov deal being derided. Ross Johnston, when was he signed? Right, was Lou? That was a Lou deal or Garth?
Years. I feel like that was like the first Lou deal.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it seems like it seems like Ross Johnston's reputation as a player has just kind of slowly gone up to the point where I think there's a lot of teams that I guess think he's a bona fide fourth line player. So didn't expect to read that today in a national column, but there it was. I think it's just it's really funny how the more and more you hear about Lou, like how his attention to detail is insane. And then you hear a story like him being involved in designing the locker room. And it's just like, I guess it all checks out, and you stop getting surprised at stuff like that.
Johnston's contract was signed July 9th, 2018. So, yeah, so just 8 days after the Tavares thing. So, yeah, that was definitely a Lou. Barry, too, talked about how they had a lot of input into, like, how things were going to be built. And I mean, to me, that makes sense. Like, why wouldn't you? I mean, this opportunity doesn't come around very often. I mean, I'm sure that when they were building Bridgestone Arena, in Nashville and Barry Trotz was going to be the first head coach. I can't imagine he got that much input, you know, this first year head coach, they probably didn't realize, think he was going to be around that long. And so I'm sure he wasn't asked, but I guarantee you Lou had a lot of input into how Prudential Center was built in Newark, you know, have it after playing at Continental Airlines / Brendan Byrne for that long. So yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty cool. I do find it. Lou is nothing if not consistent, because that conductor story is sort of a takeoff and a variation on a story that Ken Danico has told 100 times. I've heard him, you know, on different podcasts and different stories telling about how, you know, he one time he was kind of getting a little bit kind of tired of his role maybe with the Devils and wanted a little bit more, and got it within himself to finally go talk to Lou about maybe getting a trade going. And Lou said, you know, he's like, Ken, let me tell you something. I look at this team as an orchestra. And what does an orchestra have? It's got different musicians playing different instruments. We've got violinists. We've got clarinetists. We've got trumpet players. We've got drummers. What do you think you play? And I think Danica was like, drums, I guess. And he's like, yes, you play the drums. Now, if you want to play the violin, I can trade you to someplace where you can play the violin. But right now, we need drummers. And that is how we make music. And you know, but that's your role and you play it well. And that's what we need here. And that's how we're going to, you know, make music together and win. And I think Danica was like, okay. And then that was it. I mean, obviously the story is much funnier when Ken Danico tells it, but like, you know, you can see that consistency in the story. Like that's what he does feel. People have roles. We talked about it just a few minutes ago. Like people have roles. And if you're a drummer, you're a drummer. And that your job is to play the drums as best as you possibly can. And there are guys, you know, Matt Barzell ain't a drummer. That guy is a soloist, you know, like he's a trumpet player. I don't pick your instrument. So flute, trumpet, clarinet, saxophone, whatever it is. He is the soloist. And, you know, what is Anders Lee? I guess he's kind of a trombone player, I guess. You know, he's important. You know, he doesn't always stand out. Sometimes he does. Sometimes he doesn't. And you can just go all the way down the line with these guys. But like, actually, you know what? Beauvillier is definitely a clarinet player. He screams clarinet to me. Again, very important. Sometimes solos, but generally, you know, it kind of brings that kind of like lilting, you know, music up towards the end. And then the goalies, I can't imagine. But anyway, in any event, I could see Lou giving that speech. And I wish somebody had recorded it because I want to hear him give it, because that is the perfect encapsulation of what Lou Lamoriello's sort of team building philosophy is that orchestra story.
the one thing I was disappointed at, you know how, like, if you go see Dave Chappelle these days, he, like, makes you put your phone in, like, a locker or something before going in.
I didn't know that.
Into it. No. Yeah, like, you can't bring your phone into his shows. And I was a little disappointed that Lou didn't make the people do that. Be like, all right, you know, go hand your phone over to these guys, and then I'll tell you whatever you want, you know. But, and also, speaking of, like, I can see those suits that they wear with, like, the tail kind of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jackets. Tuxedo. I don't know. Yeah. Yes. Those tuxedos with the tail. I can see Brock Nelson in one for some reason. Like, really, like perfect fit for him. You know, obviously, Anders Lee. Like, Anders Lee has a tuxedo. Like, he's like the type of tuxedo that the people who walk the awards presenters up and down. Like, yeah. that's his kind of tuxedo. Whereas Nelson, I can totally see as a, you know, kind of an orchestra type.
Actually, the clothes and suits brings up another point, and you mentioned this too, that somebody asked Lou about the sort of hair rules, right? And he talked about that. I mean, he's never been shy about saying why he does that. It's a team exercise. Like you know, you wake up and the first thing you do is you shave and you get dressed by the rules, and it keeps the focus on the ice and not on, you know, what you're going to wear or what you look like. And it gives the team something to kind of hold on to as a group. And to this day, I have never heard a single player complain about this. Like, no Islander, you know, he's traded a bunch of dudes. It's not like Nick Leddy got to Detroit and all of a sudden said, thank God I can grow a beard again, because I was feeling shackled by the, you know, the tyrant, the tyranny of Lou Lamoriello finally lets my beard grow. And, you know, in 2 seconds, like he just grew a beard, like something like that. That has not been the case. But there was a story on ESPN this week, and Jeff Merrick again was talking about today on his show about how, you know, the Coyotes have relaxed their wardrobe rules this year. So like guys can sort of just come as they are and how they feel like it, and how there's been some discussions within the league, the Players Association, how they want more teams to do this. And, you know, there've been some pushback from teams, guess who, obviously. And my only thing is that, like, the Coyotes can do whatever they want. Teams can do whatever they want. These are rules. I have dress code rules where I work. Like, I can't wear shorts when I had an office to go to. I can't wear shorts. I can't wear flip-flops. And you know what? Life goes on, and everybody does their job, and it's okay. And, you know, it's a place where people work in jeans and T-shirts. And if you wear a polo shirt or shirt with sleeves, you're considered probably overdressed. You know, like, it's a casual place. But you can't have shorts, and you can't have flip-flops, and it's okay. It's fine. But my thing is, when people say stuff like, well, NHL players showing personality and coming to the rink dressed how they want and not in these boring suits is going to grow the game and bring attention to the NHL. That is nonsense. That is 100% BS. There is no way that this sport, which has struggled to get eyeballs for its entire existence, is going to somehow gain popularity magically overnight because Austin Matthews wears a funky suit to a game day. Like, that is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. I don't understand this. It's like the parroting. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's going to be great. People are really going to get it. They are not. They don't know who Austin Matthews is outside of Toronto, and they don't care. They don't know. And they don't care. And no suit is going to change that. I don't know what the answer is, because we've been trying to find it for 30 years, but I'm listening to this and I'm like, I don't understand. Who cares? Who cares what these guys wear? And the guys don't complain. So what difference does it make? I don't know. Just
it goes back to the something we talked about last season a little bit, that hypothetical fan that's out there that the NHL's always been trying to get that doesn't exist. You know, it's just it's Joe sports fan isn't thinking, you know, I might get into the NHL this year. Let me see what Vinny Hinostroza is wearing.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's not how it works.
Fans want more fighting. No, the fighting brings new fans. No, they want this. They want more goals. No, they want more, you know, they want tighter games that are closer. We have no idea. And neither does the NHL. But it's got nothing to do with guys wearing, you know, suits with no socks. Like, it's just, it's insane. I don't understand.
Anyway. Yeah. It's a type of thing that another thing like that 10 years from now, I think a lot of people are going to be like, yeah, I really regret spending that much time arguing about Nick Leddy's beard or Nick Bonino's Corsi 4 percentage, whether it's whether it's buoyed by his line mates or if it's actually him driving that line. Like, I think a lot of people are going to start to regret how much time they spent on stuff like that. But, you know, I was listening to Sirius NHL radio today, and or yesterday, somebody was saying each fan base has four types of fans, and everyone kind of fits into a bucket. It's the fan that's always pessimistic, the fan that's always optimistic, the fan that only wants to talk about, you know, that numbers say, and then the other fan is kind of the well-adjusted one. And I wouldn't say that you or I are particularly well adjusted. Like, we're just on a roller coaster along for the ride. When it's high, like, we're there to celebrate the highs, and when it's low, is where the world is falling. But I just thought it was pretty poignant, because I think that's never been more true than it is right now. Because it's the one downside of this part of the sports calendar, and it's a really great time. The MLB playoffs starting and ending last night, but then the hockey season coming back if you're into basketball, and the football, college football. You know, we got the T20 Cricket World Cup at the end of the month. It's like, there's just a lot going on, but it does remind you that at one of the cons of the hockey season is the ever-growing exhaustion feeling that is, you know, scrolling Twitter during the NHL season.
Yeah, it's already, it's too much. It's people too much and it never ends.
People are already in mid-season form, I tell you.
By the way, Flyers fans, by the way, are actually both too optimistic and too pessimistic at the same exact time. Sometimes in the same game, sometimes in the same period. It's you think we're on a roller coaster, man. They're just watching them is a roller coaster. But that is true that there are kind of these different groups. But yeah, it is too much already. And I guess that's our segue to. Oh, and thanks to Brian Skernick for the intel. And we're going to put a link to Skernick Wines so you can check out their selection there. And they're going to be sold at UBS Arena with the Pinot Project. So take a look to see, look out for them at UBS. And hey, they're listeners. So be nice to them. Say hello. Tell them we sent you.
Yes.
So this week, or actually for the last few weeks, The Athletic has been posting their NHL previews. The Islanders one popped on Tuesday, which, you know, for to make a long story short, means that they're expected to be pretty good. This is, you know, when we're getting down to crunch time and what the model says are the best teams in the league. The preview itself was actually very complimentary. It was by Dom L. Lecision at the Athletic, who's kind of a villain amongst Islanders fans. But it was a very, really well-written piece. And it was nice that, you know, he was very complimentary of the team and how they're built and saying that, you know, barring any kind of insane collapse, this team is expected to, would be expected by the numbers to win the division and challenge for the cup. That's all great. But man, people have long memories. Especially us, especially Islanders fans. And when somebody spends 3 years telling us that our team are frauds that have no talent, we're not quite soon to forget that. So it's a cool piece. You should check it out. But I read it shaking my head thinking, did I fall through a hole in space somehow? Like, did I dream all of these slings and arrows that my team has been taking all this time for being just, you know, not very good and riding hot goalie or a good coach or this, that, the other thing to their success? I was like, and there's a line, and you brought it up too, when he said that, you know, he's always preached patience with the Islanders. What? Preached what? Patience? You preached that they were garbage. Anyway. Check it out if you haven't already, but I don't know, man.
it's just funny because it's not like we talked about it with Eric Gustafson, that there's never any you know, I was wrong, you know, there's
right
stuff. And when it is, it's like very much like I was wrong, but here's, you know, but actually I was right because I was just following this and my process was right. Like, you know, that's not how it goes when you're doing this kind of work. You just kind of have to accept that you have a, you know, a job where you're going to have to own up to some things and they're not big deals. It's not like he was like, yep, shouldn't have, you know, invaded Flanders in World War I. Like your bad decision was just that you projected a hockey team wrong. And that's it. You know, it's not too serious, buddy. But he doesn't, I think he, one of the funny things about, that kind of sect of Twitter is they keep making the same jokes and then new people come in doing similar things that, like, you know, posting player cards or whatever. And then those people make the same jokes too. So, as soon as the Islanders story posted, I was like, oh, can't wait for him to say like, oh, I can't win. Like, I predict them to do well and I get yelled at, and I predict them to do wrong and do bad and I get yelled at. And lo and behold, it took like 3 seconds for that joke to pop out. And, the patience thing was just something else. Against the Bruins, he had his model, not him, I guess, but even the article too, that he wrote afterwards, is like just about how great the Bruins were and that they were going to win the Bruins would win that series 4 out of every 5 times, according to his analysis. And I think if you watch that series, you'd say, and don't think so. It's okay to say, maybe this is a blind spot and we've underrated the Islanders in terms of not just talent, but the way they're going about things. And it was tough to get through. There were some parts that I did appreciate, which mostly was the part where he talked about how John Tavares regretted his decision. And that coming from someone in Toronto, which was great just because I've always wanted to know that we're not, that if he does, first of all, which we'll never find out, but also like if other people think that too, and for someone like a Leafs homer, someone who was, even if he says he didn't, built a model to like make the Leafs look good, or waited.
The Leafs preview, ways. By the way, has not posted yet. So yeah,
of course,
you know what they're going to be like.
One of my favorite things was how he talked. He was talking about the Hurricanes and that he's like shifted the model to basically think Freddie Anderson is terrible now, whereas when he was on the Leafs, it used to be like, in so many words. He's like, the only thing the model cares about with goalies is, you know, how well you played recently, where it used to be not like that. Well, oh, because, you know, Peter Mrazek and his little stint last year was really good and Freddie Anderson wasn't, I guess, is your thinking there, which is good. But yeah, I think that the whole thing is just, it's I could have, if you had asked me, if you said for, you know, for Lighthouse Hockey, write like a parody of this article, like write it exactly how you think Dom would, I think I would get 98% of that because it is exactly what you'd expect. He's, you know, not, I just guess he's not all that witty. I don't know, clever maybe is the right word. And it always shines through in his writing, I guess.
There's always like a layer of flop sweat whenever anybody else writes about the Islanders, but particularly at the Athletic and particularly coming from Toronto, because they're sort of like, isn't it funny how the Islanders are pretty good and nobody thought they were going to be? Like, dude, we've heard the joke before. We've got just shut up and tell us about our team, please. Like, that's all we've ever wanted. And some people in the comments were like, this is all we've ever wanted. Just a bit of respect. Like,
yeah,
this is a good team. And they're built good and they got a good coach and they kind of know what they're doing. You know, like that's all anybody wants.
One other point I want to make too, is that there is definitely a clear, like polarizing division in fandom, not just here, but other sports too, like between the quote unquote, like old hockey man and these like new age fanalists. And I think they like, it's funny that a lot of these people who kind of veer towards that the kind of old school eye testy fans saw what the Islanders were doing and were right about them much earlier than people who were waiting for the numbers to finally tell them that they were good. Like sometimes you just got to be like, just a team's winning more often than it's losing. That might mean something.
Right.
And just like put it away and you don't take it so seriously. And I like that. I like that nobody ever says that either. Like, well, maybe these people who said that, and also in the article, he's talked about how like chemistry and physicality and grit and all this stuff does matter. Whereas 3 years ago, if you said, oh, you know, I like Matt Martin because he's a gritty player, you would be laughed at. You know, he used the G word. Good one.
I mean, they and by extension us just spent all summer laughing at the Rangers because they picked up, you know, Ryan Reeves and Sammy Blaze and these other gritty guys, you know, for that exact reason. So
it's very true. That's very true. But it's just funny that stuff is, it's when it's convenient for the narrative, it matters. And when it's not, we can all, you know, point and laugh at Jim Matheson for being like, Chris Russell is just the best.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's the thing. I mean, there's a sort of subtle or maybe not so subtle, like hypocrisy about it. And like their answer is always like, well, it's the model. It's just a percentage. Like just because I gave the Islanders a 25% chance of beating the Bruins in the playoffs doesn't mean that, you know, it was me. That was the model going by the numbers. And it's like, yeah, but that's your model. You're the guy who made it. And like, you were wrong. Like it's, you know, I mean, so this was the one time that, you know, like you said, there's a 25% chance. Okay. So the Bruins would win 4 out of, you know, 5 matchups here. Like this was the one time that this is like Avengers Endgame. Like this is the one time that we have to, you know, get through. Wow. Lucky us. Right. I mean, if we're living in an alternate timeline, that wouldn't have happened. The four of the timelines would have the Bruins winning that series. So like, and then, you know, you get these defenders like, what don't people understand? Like, it's just a percentage. It's just, you know, it's an outcome, you know, it's not a prediction. It's, you know, just a probability. And it's like, yeah, but you're putting your name on it. Mm-hmm. And so you're putting on your name on something that says the Islanders are going to lose and then they win. Like, yeah, what do you want them to
writing
do?
A 1,000 words. It's not like you just post the chart and gets out of there too. It's
yeah. You know, we dunk on people that do hot takes and it's like this, I mean, it's not a hot take cause you're using numbers basically, but like, at the same time, like you said this was going to happen and it didn't happen. And now people are calling you out on it. Like, that's just how it's going to work. It's just, you know.
And I like how it's like a big deal. Like, oh, right. Like I think the, like, man, there's like 50% of people who are doing this are predicting the Islanders to do well. It's not
right.
It's or to win the cup. It's not just to do well. Everyone thinks they're going to do well. A lot of people think they're going to win the cup. Right. It's not. This isn't you like stepping out on a limb and saying something. It's like it's yeah. Yeah, I think it's arrogant. It was a little arrogant too. He's like, this is what Islander fans have been waiting for.
Yeah.
We'll shelve our discussion of the pressures of having a good team for next week when we talk before the start of the season, because I do think that is worth exploring, because there are people that are like, oh great, now this is the kiss of death. Dom thinks we're good. So you know, it's funny, but at the same time I kind of get that too, because there's a lot of pressure there that the Islanders haven't seen in quite some time. But again, that'll be a discussion for another time. Speaking of other episodes, so we are going to have an episode on Sunday. We'll record it in the afternoon. I'll put it up that night. We just kind of want to get out some thoughts about the rest of the league. We're going to, you know, obviously we'll talk about the Metro Division, but we won't focus on the Islanders. We're going to kind of bounce around the league and talk about other teams that we probably don't know anything about or just straight up don't like. So that'll come your way Sunday. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll have, I'm sure, a few thoughts about the Arizona Coyotes and Andrew Ladd and the Seattle Kraken and all those, you know, Colorado and Chicago and all those other teams. So should be a lot of fun. One of those teams obviously is the Leafs. You watched the Amazon Prime show All or Nothing. I did not. Based on what you told me, I think I probably made the right choice, but I'm glad you saw it, because I want to hear what you thought of this. It's five parts or six parts?
Five
parts.
Thank you.
It's five part series that follows the Leafs in their All or Nothing championship potential season, and they end up with nothing. So what'd you think?
Yeah, it wasn't very good. And I think if this was any team, I would say the same thing. If it followed the same structure, you know, this isn't like I'll hold my hand up. I hate the Leafs more than basically most organizations on the planet. So there's definitely part of that is you can take with a grain of salt. But I also watch and take in a lot of hockey content. And first of all, the way it was talked about by Jeff Eric and Elliot Friedman, I was like, oh, wow, maybe this is pretty good. Hmm. You know, they are talking about some kind of in the weeds stuff. And it was my thinking was I wanted to watch the whole thing. I didn't want to just skip to the end to watch the great part. But because I wanted one of my favorite things is when they do like 30 for 30s or whatever about big comebacks is seeing looks on fans and players and coaches' faces of teams that do collapse before. So like they think they're, you know, when the Leafs were up 3-1 or whatever, you just see like, oh, they're living right now thinking they're going to cruise into the second round. And then, cause it makes the painful shots much, much more, sweeter. And, the way that it was structured. So Will Arnett is the, narrator. Hmm. He's not really funny in it at all. Like it's just like very, I don't know. Like the jokes are just there weren't jokes even. Like you would just say like something that make a like if you made a you know fifth grader whose math teacher hates him because he's just like kind of like that kind of that sense of humor. That's kind of the jokes in it. But yeah, it's the structure was terrible because it's basically they would I would say go like chunk of each chunk by chunk in the season, probably like week or two. So they like, you know, first 14 days of the season, Leafs are off to a fast start, blah, 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 blah. But then, you know, Jimmy Vesey, who, by the way, if William Nylander's camp was upset about the way he was portrayed, which I didn't think was anything wrong, Jimmy Vesey should be suing everybody because they showed like we joked about the Chris Johnston tweet all the time where he shows Jimmy Vesey talking to Manny Malhotra after a practice and he's like this is his third conversation with a coach in 10 days and like just peak Leafs Twitter kind of tweet and they showed a conversation with him and Sheldon Keefe where he's like you know I don't really Sheldon Keefe was like you're a vanilla player like you're not really doing much or something and then he was waived and but they never really explored anything. So like they didn't explore like what's it like for Jimmy Vesey the night before waivers? What's it like for the management team? How are they planning life with or without him? Stuff like that. Or when the Senators, remember the Senators came back from that 5-1 deficit? Like they show that game a little bit, some behind the scenes stuff, which was great to watch because it was fun collapse. But like after that, they just move on. That's basically what the whole documentary was like, they just mentioned something and then they would just show like a 30-second clip and move on. There was in 24/7, they would spend like time with the players and like talk about, oh, Brent Johnson's a backup goalie. Like what's that life? Like what's that kind of life like and stuff like that?
Yeah, I was going to say this doesn't sound like the 24/7 thing that we're kind of used to, you know, the on HBO. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it feels like very, they just kind of did the least amount of work and still got by. And also the collapse, like I was really excited because I thought like this, the last episode would just be all about these failures and whatever. And I'm watching the last episode, and I'm sorry if I'm spoiling this for anyone, but the Leafs lose the series. I'm watching the last episode, and I'm like, this episode's like 45 minutes. We're not even close to game 7 yet. Like, this is, and I like look at the time left and be like, they're going to sum up this entire collapse in like 3 minutes. And that's basically what they did. They were just like, oh, the Leafs, it was like they edited the show before the collapse happened because the whole tone of the show is this team's on the run. Like they're going to make it. They might win the Stanley Cup for the first time since 1967. They might win a playoff series for the first time since 2004. And then around the midway point of the last episode, they just kind of start showing highlights of them losing to the Canadians and then being like, and they lost. And, you know, that's about it. And they just move on. They didn't spend any time talking to like the players or anything. It was like really?
They did all that and then didn't interview any of the players afterwards?
Like barely. Like maybe one or two. I don't know.
Wow.
Like they close it with like Kyle Dubas erasing 2021 on a whiteboard and then writing like 2021-22 and then putting a couple players like cards on a whiteboard where he puts the lines and like the cap. Dubas, by the way, the one thing I will say that was redeeming about this and is almost worth watching just for this reason is our hatred of Kyle Dubas is warranted. Like it just the guy is like such a ham. He knows exactly what he's doing. Like they showed him, you know, the running down the stairs like when Tavares got hurt, which like right thing to do, but like he taught like the whole scene was not about really Tavares. It was about like what a Kyle look at Kyle Dubas running down the stairs and going to check on his player as if like nobody else would even think to do it. like he's a unicorn. He cares about his players. But he really hams it up and it's really a show. I would say he's probably the one who spends the most time talking to the camera and they spend the most time with him. And then, I mean, it doesn't really tell you anything we don't already know about Tavares. He's a complete, you know, robot or whatever. There's some like real cringy stuff with him and his uncle in like his backyard.
I was going to say, what was that scene like with him and the uncle? Cause it sounded staged.
You could do it probably. You could probably play both parts of it right now. And I would be like, yeah, you got 80% of that. Right. It's exactly what you think about. But yeah, it was really underwhelming and it's unfortunate because we just talked about how seeing, you know, Jacob Chychrun in a wacky outfit won't grow the game, but this was something that, you know, maybe could have, because it's on Amazon Prime. And I think it was a kind of a miss on all parts and something that, I think the NHL probably thought was really cutting edge. But at the same time isn't like, it's cool, but it's not like something that hasn't been done before. And, it felt like, just them thinking like, oh, just giving these fans like a look behind the camera is enough. Like, no, we can see that because these players all have Instagram and stuff at this point. Like, I want to know what I want you to go deeper than just saying like, oh, how did Jack Campbell get his nickname? But what did you know? It's the name of a very famous soup company.
Every athlete named Campbell is nicknamed Soup. Brian Campbell was Soup too. Like, that's it.
I will say Campbell was the only player that did come across. I'm like, yeah, he's interesting at least, but the rest of it. Yeah. I think it's worth watching just if you want like a little catharsis, you know, you can just skip to the end and watch them collapse. But otherwise, like if don't expect to watch it and come out being like, that was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's really disappointing. Yeah. I think, yeah. Like the 24/7 show, of course, narrated by Liev Schreiber, you know, is kind of the gold standard for that kind of stuff. And, you know, was it perfect? No, but I mean, it did show the players' sort of personalities. You kind of get, you know, kind of just the random interactions off the ice that you and I have that they have to. That was where we got the classic, you know, Randy Carlyle versus the hotel toaster incident, you know, is like, he's making the joke, good one, Randy. Like, you know, do I want to watch Randy Carlyle put toast in a toast on trying to figure out how to use a toaster at a hotel? Not really, but it is kind of funny that this guy who was the coach of the Leafs at the time, and it's like, yeah, he doesn't understand how to use that thing either. Or like the, you know, there was a one of the Penguins ones, they showed this whole elaborate prank that I think Marc-Andre Fleury played on Crosby, where they like moved all the stuff out of his room or something like that. So like that kind of stuff, it can be interesting. And I'm going to give the Leafs at least a modicum of credit. Like, I was kind of assuming that they went into this with the idea that they would show a lot of that sort of behind the scenes stuff. But from what you've said and what everything else I've read, they did not. Like,
it's the most valuable franchise in the league, right? I think, by Forbes. So like, show us some, like, you could go beyond Kyle Dubas, like go show us like what goes into running, like, and I will, you know, you can excuse them because it was during the bubble season, right, or the pandemic season, and Canada had pretty strict restrictions, but you know, they could have done so much more, with the organization, like giving us like a look at, hey, what's it like, you know, working in the backroom staff for this team, or, you know, it's like, it was frustrating because there would be times where you'd be like, oh, this is getting pretty interesting. And then next thing you know, like, oh, look at Joe Thornton. He's saying something funny again. Like, all right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's a little, frustrating. The I was telling you, like, the Freddie Anderson injury thing was very like, just they like kind of just kept mentioning passing that he wasn't playing, and then be like, you know, his situation, he also, like, I think has like a bone to pick too, because people forget, like, he was really good for them up until the bubble playoffs, and then last year was obviously hurt, and kind of just discarded for Jack Campbell. But yeah, it's like they didn't really get into it with him or anything. So yeah, it was like, I don't know, C-. Yeah.
And the whole thing about that absence was it was never really fully explained.
Right.
Like, he just, well, Freddie Anderson's not back yet, so Jack Campbell gets a start.
Right.
Okay, like, what's going on, you know? But because there's this sort of like, I guess, gentleman's agreement, they just didn't decide not to tell us, you know. But yeah, that's the same. But, you know, and I get what you're saying, like, you know, maybe they picked a tough year to do it because of the COVID restrictions and everything. And I mean, you could only have so many people at the games in the first place. So like, you know, you're going to add a camera crew to that too. Even a small one is, you know, probably 3, 4, 5 people. But at the same time, I mean, that was a year where the Leafs never actually left Canada. So
right,
you'd think that you'd have more time to show that kind of stuff. Cause I mean, you're only playing the same 6 teams over and over again. Like,
and I don't think they talked to any fans either. Like just like the fans going to the last game when they could have like 500 frontline workers. Like,
yeah,
hey, why aren't, you know, what's it like to root for this team that just had, because we forget, this was also not mentioned, like the North Division was such a cakewalk. It was so set up for this team to, it was basically on a silver platter for them to do this up until game 5 of, against the Canadians. And, of course it doesn't go. And like, there was no, hey, like, let's talk to a few fans. Like, even that shot might even be cliche at this point of, you know, a few fans talking about how sad they are at the end of a season like that ends like this. But it was much better than what it would have been, much better than what they actually showed, which was, you know, basically nothing.
And it's funny because I don't know if I mentioned last week, but I watched that Once Upon a Time in Queens, the 4-part Mets documentary on the 86 Mets. And it's fantastic. It's 30 for 30. If you have an ESPN Plus subscription, you could watch it. I think it'll be probably played over and over again on ESPN. It's awesome. Whether you grew up in the, you know, 80s, New York in 86 or not, it was great. And like, not only did they talk to most of the actual Mets, and so you get people like Doc Gooden and Daryl Strawberry talking about how much cocaine they did at Studio 54 in that era. And they talk a lot about Keith Hernandez. He's like kind of one of the stars of the show. But I mean, they talk to people like Oliver Stone, who made Wall Street because it was such a, you know, a seminal movie for New York at that time. Like, New York was packed to the gills with guys pretending to be Michael Douglas as Gordon Gekko. They talked to a bunch of writers, Cyndi Lauper is on it. I mean, I love Cyndi Lauper. That's great. She was, and it says like singer from Queens. It's like, yeah, I guess that's one way to describe Cyndi Lauper. She's Cyndi fucking Lauper. Like, it's kind of a big, she's kind of a big deal. Is she even a Mets fan? I don't know. She's a lady from Queens who was there in New York at the time and was kind of a big deal. So like, you know, they reached every single person they could possibly find to talk with them. Plus like archival footage and stuff. I mean, and they got into guys that we forgot about, you know? And so I guess there's a couple of different ways to do it. And
yeah,
that was one way. And the Leafs way was another way.
Yeah. This is that's the kind of give it everything you got. And this was the bare bones. So yeah. If it was like a press release. And I think that's a big problem with the sport in general, is a lot of the content they produce gets so watered down that it just basically turns into a press release. And that was basically if the Leafs got to, if after the fact, the Leafs said, hey, like, we need to release a documentary about that season that just happened. Mm. That would be the least way that they wanted to do it, because it just didn't, like I said, it just didn't really get into the collapse and the depressing part of the season two, not meeting expectations. So it's just a missed opportunity. That's the nature of this sport and league.
Not talking to the fans is really, because you've got literally thousands of people all trying to be Steve Dangle. You've got the Steve Dangle here, and then you've got all these other people below him trying to be desperately to be him and to, you know, achieve his success. I'm sure any one of them would have happily gotten on a Zoom call and you could have recorded them and asked them what they felt at various points in the season. But what are you going to do? All I know is I'm not a filmmaker. I wish I was, but there you go. Okay, well, so the season hasn't even started yet, and we've already got your in-depth reviews about an off-Broadway play and now an Amazon TV show. So looking forward to what's coming up next. I can't wait
Jesus
to hear.
Christ. Oh, man.
Should be great. Both of them, great. I loved it. Very, very in-depth. So looking forward to more. So we'll see how it goes
once the season actually starts. It's funny because like we don't have people in our lives who would understand how frustrating it was as an experience to watch that, except for the people listening to the show, people who talk on Twitter. So it's like, it's a conversation that I wanted to have with somebody. And I mean, imagine talking to, people who don't really hate the Leafs with the passion that we have, then trying to explain to them this documentary, they'd be bored within 30 seconds, be like, can you just shut the fuck up, please? Just tell me if I should watch it or not. Don't watch it. Sorry.
If my wife came home and found me, she'd be like, what are you watching? I'd be like, oh, it's this Amazon Prime show about the Maple Leafs. I thought you hate the Maple Leafs. I do. So why the hell are you watching it? Like, that's the exact conversation. I'd be like, yeah, you know what? You're right. And I'd probably just turn it off. But anyway. So, yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Same with the play, too. So, so it's good. Good. So, there you go. Yeah, you definitely got the right audience, because I think people are out there. I don't know how many folks who listen to this have watched it. Again, for me personally, I'm not interested in it, especially least of all now. I wasn't before, but I'm definitely not now. And, I know how it went, and I'm not in the mood to. I mean, it's bad enough. I can't escape the sort of Leaf laurels every single day just by accident, just by being a subscriber to The Athletic. You gotta get that kind of stuff. But I'm not going to willingly go into a TV show to watch them too. So so if you watched it and you saw it and you have some thoughts, let us know. maybe you guys liked it. Maybe there's some aspect of it that we didn't see. So there you go. This was a long one. We've got a lot going on for having covered two preseason games. We talked about a lot of different stuff. So we're going to be back on Sunday, and we're going to talk about the rest of the league. We're going to do absolutely no research. You do research. I mean, you do research for work, so you'll know more about this than I will. So I'll just kind of probably just direct you to tell me about what's going on with all these different teams. We'll do that, and then we'll come back on Wednesday for, I guess, what will essentially be kind of a season, kickoff preview episode or whatever, and we'll talk all about what it's like to root for a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations. That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, take a while to get my head around that.
Yeah, it's not only aspirations, but expectations.
Right.
Oof. Woof.
Oh, my stomach is sorry. Yeah, let's stop right there. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read his work at The Action Network. Listen to him on The Action Network podcast. And then the NHL Fantasy Podcast. Is that the new one too?
Yeah, they have me on before the season to talk. Just some future bets. I like Dave Haxtell to win Coach of the Year lot, because the Kraken have a pretty good chance of making the playoffs. And if they do, every beat writer will vote for him. So
Even if they come anywhere near the playoffs, he'll get votes. But so check that out too over at NHL.com. Please read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up to date Islanders news and discussion. We are going to be without Joe Buono this year. He's gone on to do some other projects this season. Trust me when I tell you, you're going to want to keep an eye on these projects. Islanders fans are going to love them. That's all I'm going to say. We're going to talk more to Joe going on this year. Noel will be back. He's still figuring out what he wants to do with the podcast this year. I'm trying to steer him towards the interview podcast because he's great at them, and that's not what we do. So hopefully he'll come back soon, and we'll have some cool stuff for us too. But good luck, Joe. And again, we'll talk to you again very soon. And thanks for listening. And we will talk to you all again very, very shortly. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.